Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Monday, June 24th. Today, Sun Outdoors reporter Jason Blevins breaks down the latest community survey of Mountain Town residents and their view of quality of life with the influx of people since the pandemic. Before we begin, want to breathe easier this summer? Take simple steps for better air and help reduce harmful ground-level ozone in your Front Range community. Learn more at simplestepsbetterair.org. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1889, at 10 a.m., three armed men robbed Telluride's San Miguel Valley Bank, seizing over $20,000. A lookout stood outside while the robbers calmly exited, mounted their horses, and rode away. The daring heist, orchestrated by Butch Cassidy, marked his first major crime. Sheriff J.A. Beatty pursued the gang, who escaped to southeastern Utah. Despite the robbery, the bank's shareholders absorbed the loss, and Telluride's thriving mines quickly offset the stolen funds. Before we continue, as a locally owned business, Applewood prides itself on delivering exceptional plumbing, heating, and electrical services to the people of Colorado. Their team of licensed and certified professionals will tackle any home comfort issues you might have, as they always have for 50 years. Because when you choose Applewood, you're not just investing in their services, but also their employees and families. You're investing back into your community. Applewood Plumbing, Heating, and Electric. Locally owned, family operated for 50 years. Learn more at applewoodfixit.com. Now our feature story.
Thanks for listening today, everyone. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at The Sun, and I'm happy to be joined with my friend and Sun Outdoors reporter, Jason Blevins, for today's episode. Hey there, Jason Blevins.
Hey there, David Krause.
Hey, buddy. You got a story coming out this week. Always love these mountain town stories and especially what people are thinking. Jason, let's just jump right into it. A recent survey of mountain town residents, what they want in quality of life, really localized to the mountain communities. Jason, can you just kind of tell us about this latest community survey and what you make of some of these results?
Yeah, so about 4,000 people in Eagle, Grand, Pickens, Route, and Summit counties, conducted by the Northwest Colorado Council of Governments and the Colorado Association of Ski Towns, by a group of veteran tourism economists who are well-versed in surveys. It's a massive survey. The report on it is 116 pages, but it's a community survey. So it's got homeowners, longtime residents, newcomers, renters, second homeowners who are often left out of these sort of surveys. And it's sort of a benchmark that measures some of the sentiment and resident sentiment, community sentiment around the social, political, economic, cultural changes of the last 5 years since the pandemic, when we saw, you know, a surge of new residents arriving, intense tourism, skyrocketing real estate prices, and obviously all these forces combined to really limit the accessibility of housing for local workers. So it's sort of this multi-torrential storm that's going on up in the resort economies, resort communities. And where this is a good survey, it's kind of try to find these, you know, the balance between these kind of diverse groups and, you know, where, what they may be thinking in terms of, you know, where they're headed, where they're at, where they wish they were, and how they can maybe better protect their quality of life. The results were really illuminating. Nothing like super aha. You know, it's not surprising there have been a lot of people moving to mountain towns in the past 5 years since the pandemic. A surprising number of them don't work in the communities. They work from home, self-employed, work for some company outside of the place, outside of the community. And then a lot of them have this idea that it's maybe time to start thinking of emphasizing community priorities over tourist priorities. You know, for decades, these communities and these towns, ski towns, have been built around tourism. That is, their foundational economy is tourism. as we get these new residents, as people have been there for a long time, as you have sort of a more diverse economy that maybe isn't purely reliant on tourists, you're starting to see these locals and residents saying, hey, you know, how can we maybe sculpt policies that would better protect resident priorities, community priorities, rather than, you know, marketing to tourists and spending all this money on tourism? So it's a really interesting transition that we've seen. And this is one of those first kind of studies that you can really quantify and, you know, put on paper and create this sort of benchmark foundational approach to where these communities are at, where they want to be, and how they might get there. So it's a pretty fascinating report. I tried to read through it a couple times, and it's filled with all sorts of insight.
Jason, I thought one of the stats you had in there, a couple of them, 1/3 of mountain town residents see their quality of life while high is declining. And right. Most respondents agreed kind of to your point with the statement that, quote, the area is overcrowded because of too many visitors. Is that the big dynamic we're going to see really play out in the next 4 or 5 years? Or how do you see using these results for policy shaping?
Yeah, so we've seen, you know, the idea of ski town locals being tired of tourists is about as old as ski towns.
Exactly.
This is hardly some new phenomenon. But, you know, the pinch of the housing, the crowds during the pandemic, the overlapping with the workforce housing crisis, the proliferation of short-term rentals, all these things have really sort of swirled around that and gelled, you know, a growing concern over these tourist attraction sort of communities. And we wrote a story a couple of years ago, Headwaters Economics, that think tank up in Montana, called it the amenity trap. These communities with just super rich natural amenities, you know, beautiful trails right outside of town, gorgeous historic downtown, and rich people buying up homes there and forcing everybody out of town. You know, it's kind of, that's what we've seen for a while. But what's interesting about this study is that it creates what they call this continuum, where you can kind of figure out where you are on the balance between being a purely tourist-oriented community and being a purely resident-oriented. So if you sort of track along this continuum, you can find where your community perceives it is and where it would like to be. All of them would like to be more resident focused. All of them are pretty tourist focused. So there's, you look at kind of where they are and where they want to be. So where's this going to end up for policy? You know, I think we've saw that 2022 legislation that allowed communities to ask voters, hey, you know, can we redirect lodging taxes that are assigned for tourism promotion, can we take some of that money and use it for affordable housing and recreational infrastructure? And, you know, it's a state law that sort of opened that opportunity to local communities. And we've seen a handful of communities do that, pretty eagerly vote to redirect tourism dollars. One of the things we saw in this study is that a vast majority of these communities, residents are ready to divert money away from tourism marketing into other community priorities. We've seen that over, you know, the past several years as, locals have sort of raised concerns over crowds, and you've seen tourism marketing move into a more of a tourism management sort of position, less, you know, climbing up on the mountaintop, blowing the trumpet, come here and spend your money, more like come here on shoulder seasons and come here and be responsible and, you know, follow the leave no trace ethos and, you know, maybe consider shoulder seasons. So more of a managed sort of tourism promotion than just pure marketing. But I think we, you know, looking at this report, you're going to see a lot of support. Policymakers will see a lot of support for going to voters and saying, all right, we're going to redirect tourism marketing dollars. That's going to be interesting, because what happens then? You know, there's questions in this survey, like, what does your economy look like with less investment in tourism? What does it look like with fewer tourists? You know, so, you know, you might see, you know, who knows, restaurants not able to make it happen. You might not see, you know, giant, you know, stashes of money coming from lodging revenues, things like that. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting what this transition will look like as these communities move towards a more resident focus. And at the same time, what do those resort economies look like? You know, there's a surprising number of federal officials and or local officials and residents were willing to divert as much as 100% of tourism marketing dollars away from tourism marketing. So that would very high number of residents and policymakers that are willing to do that. That is pretty eye-opening. Not surprisingly, second homeowners who own short-term rentals are less inclined to divert money away from tourism promotion. Obviously, they have a big pricey asset that thrives on tourism. So it's going to be interesting to see how these communities kind of adapt to this transition. And it's going to be long and it will be careful. And this type of survey that you see, you know, with the continuum tool and, you know, being able to kind of see where you are on and how you're progressing every few years, maybe when they redo this survey, I think it'll give communities a good sort of path and tool for measuring their progress on this transition and making sure they don't move too fast so they don't necessarily, you know, shatter the foundational economy from which these towns have emerged.
Jason, what do you make of, I thought one of the interesting stats when we talk about affordability and we talk about new, you know, people moving up there. You had a stat in there from the survey, 36% of new people own homes up there. So I just thought that was low. Are you surprised by that? What do you see that as an indication of?
I think that reflects the skyrocketing price of homes up here. You know, there's a lot of people that want to come up here, and maybe they're tiptoeing in and they're going to rent first before they buy. It's obviously, you know, homes are incredibly pricey in some of these towns, so it's not necessarily surprising. One of the more interesting of those newcomers, this surge of newcomers, vast majority of them are coming from a metro area, and a lot of them are coming from Front Range, Metro Denver. And so Summit County and Grand County seem to be the most, you know, sort of absorbing the most of these Front Range, Denver area new migrants, new arrivals. And they're, you know, that's not surprising. Consider Grant County has probably the most affordable homes of the five counties. And then Summit County is kind of the closest to the metro area. So, you know, I think it's not that surprising. But the fact that they don't own homes, which is mentioned in the survey, means they may be inclined to move. And so, you know, if you build a lot of policies off the voice of your renters and your workforce, and then they leave, you know, that can be a challenge for policymakers. So I think, you know, the report draws some attention to the, you know, sort of transient nature of some of renters in resort communities, which is, again, not new. But, you know, as policymakers sort of adapt, you know, and adjust this transition with a resident focus, you know, the survey takers kind of illustrate the idea that, you know, person's renting and, you know, it takes them 15 years to own, they might not, you know, they might not be around to vote for a while for you if you come up with a great plan and then, you know, need them to support you on your next election bid or something like that. Kind of an interesting dynamic up there between the renters and the residents and the second homeowners. Again, those they have not been included, but these are diverse interests and they have different priorities. And this survey really showed, you know, the renters they're concerned about, you know, pretty basic stuff. You know, cost of living is very high for all of them. But, you know, the quality of life is, you know, is a struggle for them more as they, you know, grind out the service work, you know, whereas second homeowners and maybe the full-time residents who own their house for a long time, they maybe have a little more, less of a grind. You know, they're more inclined to maybe serve on boards and things like that. So it's an interesting dynamic up there in these mountain towns. There always has been. But that's, again, why this report's so interesting, because it really has this just stew of opinions, and it's a real, you know, it's a sentiment and it's a community sentiment. It's not just your locals, it's your second homeowners and investors and your, you know, your renters and your transient service workers. So it's really a super broad glimpse peek at, you know, what these communities are thinking right now. And it's going to be interesting to see the next one for sure.
Yeah, I was going through and I was like, that makes sense. That makes sense. I can make that make sense. And so, yeah, it's really interesting to be able to qualify it all, especially to, like you mentioned, it, so many of the counties that have these kind of communities, which are so much different than, you know, the Front Range, to be able to have that kind of voice.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's the unique thing about these mountain towns is they're, you know, they have very vibrant communities and people feel very passionately about them and they want them to be protected. And they, you know, they really want to see their backcountry protected and some of the natural amenities really guarded and, you know, not overwhelmed, not impacted by tourism and crowds. You know, that's why a lot of people move up there. Same time, you know, it's trying to balance some of these different concerns with economic concerns that have built the towns. You know, these are tourist towns and they're going to look a lot different if they don't have tourists. So it's going to be an interesting transition if this sentiment continues and folks are still, you know, this is a long-term transition away from tourism to embrace more community priorities. It will be fascinating to watch how these economies evolve.
Good stuff, Jason Blevins. Always good stuff. Always good perspective. If you haven't checked out Jason's weekly Outsider newsletter, you can check that out at coloradosun.com/outsider. And story on the survey will post later this week at coloradosun.com. If you haven't already, hey, take a minute and give the Sun Up a review on your favorite app. We always like all 5 stars. Appreciate any kind of love you can give us as we build this platform. Jason Blevins, my friend, make it a great week.
Thank you, David Cross.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Anyone who has tried to walk along Denver's 16th Street Mall in the past few months has likely come away a little shocked by huge trenches blocked by high fences. There are also fewer retailers and restaurants to visit. The business owners who survived the pandemic downturn aren't sure they'll live through this renovation project intended to improve the appeal of the mile-long mall. Construction is behind schedule and expected to last another year. In this week's Colorado Sunday feature, we look at the challenges around revamping the iconic downtown Denver Mall. Proponents of a new state law have secured the remaining $30,000 needed to kickstart a study of racial equity in Colorado. That means a committee can be convened to quantify the financial impact of slavery, racism, and discrimination on Black Coloradans and the state's economy. The law allows History Colorado to conduct historical research on housing, economic mobility, education, healthcare, and the criminal justice system. Then, the group can create recommendations for corrective actions. But the law came with no state funding, so advocates had to raise $785,000 to pay for the first year of work. The Colorado primary election is Tuesday, and the Sun has a quick guide for those who haven't been able to do their research. There are a number of U.S. congressional district battles to determine who will represent the Republican and Democratic parties in the November 5th general election. There are also numerous incumbent state senators and representatives facing challenges in their party's primaries. For more information on the primary ballot and how to vote before 7 p.m. Tuesday, go to coloradosun.com and follow us Tuesday night as the results come in. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
I'm Lauren Wynot, Director of Membership at the Colorado Sun. I came to work at the Sun because quality, trustworthy journalism is important. As a reader and listener, I find the Sun to be a breath of fresh air. The journalists tell Colorado stories that keep me informed, entertained, and engaged. If you also trust the Sun for your news, join me as a member at coloradosun.com/join. Your support helps to bring you and other Coloradans the news you deserve. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you.